You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony?
Hey everybody. Well, I'm in the car. A little different setup than normal. And this microphone stinks. It smells, the little foam cover smells like horrible. That's most of what I have to say about the odors going on here. But if it sounds a little different now, you know why. Christmas has passed. Christmas has been over for a couple days. I've gone back to work to do some useful work, like mopping a floor that someone peed all over, apparently. I don't know. You know, I get so tired of... I don't really argue with people at work about it anymore, because it's like, what's the point? I'm too outnumbered. But, you know, people at work will talk about how... We'll talk about, like, how a men's bathroom, it's disgusting because people pee all over the floor and whatever. But I gotta say, like, there's a lady thing that happens that I don't think everyone knows about, which is, like, a lot of times when a lady takes a pee, then you lift up the seat, which you would never do as a lady. I don't know why you'd be lifting up the seat, but when you do lift up the seat, the underside is covered in pee. Like droplets of pee, wet pee. And I'm like, all right, not impressed. Not impressed with that. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen. Anyway, I'm in a mood. I wrote a column about Die Hard for Christmas time. And I was just reading up some background information. I found this thing that pissed me off. Because, so, you know... There's, like, this whole idea. It seems like every Christmas we find a new thing to, like, make into a problem, to problematize, right? Like, you know, one year we were all obsessed with Baby It's Cold Outside. Like, this is a date rape song that doesn't understand consent. And I think we all calmed down because a bunch of smart ladies talked about, like, no, this is really what's happening in this song, probably, is that... You know, a lady is, it's like, I don't know when that song was made, but let's say the 1950s. And, you know, what's happening is that you couldn't, as a lady, just stay the night at a single man's house. So they're sort of talking themselves into and talking each other into, like, hey, we didn't really have a choice. It's fucking freezing outside. They're probably looking out the window together and it's, you know, dry as a bone. How dry is a bone? I mean, a bone in the desert is dry, but when it's in your body, I assume it's not dry at all. It's probably got all kinds of fluids all over it, and sort of even inside. It's kind of, to me, it's a little bit like, you know, when some liquor store is like, we have the coldest beer in town, and I'm like, well, I mean, does that really matter? Because I can't drink it in the liquor store, right? It's really kind of up to me once I get it home how cold it ends up being. So anyway, I was looking around, and then this year there was a thing about Rudolph, I think. I read something about, you know, it's become difficult for me to tell whether I'm reading a real thing or if I'm reading a thing that somebody invented to mock this sort of thing. Because the thing I was reading was about how, like, Rudolph is bad because it's, like, about, you know, disability shaming or something. And it's like, oh, well, then all of a sudden when Santa needs Rudolph, bam, look who comes calling. Which I think is a... Here's the thing about some of these problematizations is, like... Yeah, I mean, you can turn anything into a problem if you give it the most uncharitable read that you possibly can. if you go into it being like, what's the most uncharitable way I can interpret this? Like, what's the worst thing that this could potential that I could talk myself into believing is happening here? Sure, anything is a problem, right? Because, and then you get pissed off, I get pissed off. Because then what I'm doing is I'm looking at Rudolph, and I'm seriously thinking about Rudolph, and I'm thinking like, well, you know, I would probably interpret it as, is Rudolph's nose really such a searchlight that Santa needs it to get through the fog? Or is Santa probably throwing this disabled little reindeer a bone and being like, hey, I'm going to teach the other reindeer a lesson to not be such assholes by having Rudolph guide the sleigh, right? Because think about, I mean, are we to believe that that Christmas, that one foggy Christmas Eve when Santa came to say, was the first Christmas Eve it was foggy in late December? Somewhere in the world, by the way. He goes around the entire fucking world. And I'm supposed to believe that when Rudolph was there, that was the first time there was fog, and Santa had no other way to guide his sleigh. That seems pretty unlikely, doesn't it? This is what pisses me off doubly. Is like, number one, yeah, if you want to do that, it's like you can do that with anything. Frosty the Snowman. Why does he have to be a man? He seems like a snow person to me. He does not have any genitalia. Oh, just because he's wearing a top hat, he's got to be a man. Only men wear top hats. You know, anything. Oh, silver bells? What is that supposed to be? Is that like silver and blue, like a Jewish thing? Oh, I see. So now you're trying to indoctrinate people who practice Judaism into your Christian holiday. I see what's going on here. See what I'm saying? Like, you could just do that. But the other thing that really pisses me off about it is then I, because I'm an idiot and I get drawn into this stuff, and then, like, thinking, legitimately thinking about why it's a stupid argument that Rudolph is a problematic tale. And then I just get mad at myself because I'm like, why are you wasting your time thinking about why this stupid premise is not true? And also, even if it was legitimate, I don't care. Like, I do not care if people think that Rudolph is, like, problematic, because I just have too hard a time feeling that way. And also, I'm like, oh, what are we teaching the children and stuff? And I'm like, well, Rudolph is like the first fucking X-Men, okay? He's got a power. He uses it to help people. The end. He uses it to help the very people who hate him. Because you know what? He's a great person. That's why there's a fucking song about him. But the one that I read that really pissed me off was about Die Hard. Because, you know, somebody had chosen to be like, okay, I'm going to watch Die Hard. And, like, I tried to watch, I used to love Die Hard, but now I don't because this thing is in it. And I was like, what is this going to be about? Because here's what I was trying to find out. I was trying to find out whether or not, you may remember that there is a pinup that John McClane passes several times that's, like, hanging up in what I think is a construction area in an unfinished office, or possibly a bulletin board of a finished office, because I guess it's like the 1980s. But it's like a topless woman. And, you know, he, like, looks at the picture and then he taps the picture one time and so on. You know, like a hello, ladies. And so what this person was saying, though, is that, now, here's what I think she was saying. I think she was saying, because there's a woman who appears in the movie, John McClane sees a woman on the telephone from an adjoining building, and she's, like, also partially naked or something, and that's what gives him the idea to try and use the phone or something. I don't know. I didn't really follow it, and also I was like, I don't really remember that part of the movie, but okay. I'll take your word for it that this happens. And so what she's saying, though, is she's like, this naked picture of a woman is just an object. And the woman on the telephone is the same as the woman in the picture. Maybe it's that the woman in the picture is on the phone And then, you know, that's what prompts him to use the telephone or something. Point being, she's like, this woman is just used as an object in Die Hard. You know, this topless woman, this nudity is just used as a, you know, attention-grabbing object for the male gaze and then to advance the story. Which I was kind of like, you know, I think you're trying to go too far. I think you're trying to do something here, which is to be like, here's why Die Hard is a problematic movie. When you gotta admit, like, I mean, okay, if you're gonna go that route, obviously the problem is like, well, you know, yeah, John McClane has to save his wife. Right? That happens in the movie. There you go. There's your problem. I mean, why do you have to go to, like, what the fuck do you want it to be? Do you want this, like, woman on this poster to be top billing? Bruce Willis. Topless lady on the phone. Which provides a useful hint. Also, I would put it this way. Die Hard is a film of the 1980s. And John McClane is a man of the 1970s. Because, you know, as he's coming to the 1980s Los Angeles, he's clearly uncomfortable with a lot of what's going on. He's never ridden a limo before, and that's why he ends up sitting in the front seat. Because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. You know, he's trying to navigate this corporate world that he does not understand, because he's just a New York City police officer and does not understand what's going on. There's a lot happening. And a lot of the point here, though, is I think that he is a little bit of a relic in a way, but then also that being a relic is, you know, his thing. Or, like, he's becoming a relic. He's not irrelevant yet, but he's getting there, and he knows he's getting there. And so, like, for him to act in a, you know, if he saw this poster hanging on the wall and had been like, oh, I'm going to studiously not look at that. I have a daughter. I can't look at pictures of nude women. What if I was sexually aroused by a picture of a nude woman when I have a daughter? What would I be thinking? McClane residence. Remember that shit? Anyway, it was just so annoying to me because I found it to be like the... And it was so long. Like, the article was so long. And the thing is, I think that, like, it's become this weird situation where if you want to problematize something, it's like, I think most people who are reading about why you find something problematic are either totally on board with you from the beginning, because basically they're like, just having a nude woman poster gratuitously in a movie is problematic. Or they're not. And I don't think that your long essay is going to convince them. And by them, I mean me, because it did not convince me whatsoever. Not buying the thesis. If I was a professor for a class, I'd be like, instead of trying to impress me with volume, as in an amount, instead of trying to impress me with the weight here, make a good point in a concise way. And leave me something to think about. Don't tell me how to feel. Okay? And then I feel like the problem then is like, you know, if you don't agree with that, it's sort of, oh, what's the matter? That's because you don't see that because you're just like a dude. And so you don't see what the problem is. And I'm like, I guess so. I guess if that's why, then that's, you know, that's my Rudolph Red Nose. That's my power that everyone's making fun of me for now, and someday some magical fatso will ask me to pull his sleigh around or something. I'm not sure, the analogy breaks down in there somewhere, but you get where I'm going. Anyway, I've just, like, it's kind of funny, you know, and, like, it comes from different sides too, you know. Like, one year it's like the conservative, like, happy holidays versus Merry Christmas. Which I'm just like, just fucking say whichever one you want, and other people can say whichever one they want. It's so confusing, too, to people, because, like, people, you know, people will at work, I'll be working the desk, and they'll be like, oh, happy holidays, you know, or they'll say, like, happy holidays, I want to say Merry Christmas. I just don't know. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And I'm just like, I just wish I could somehow express to people, like, it doesn't hurt my feelings for you to wish me a Merry Christmas. No more than it would be for you to tell me, like, you know, I hope you enjoy your post-Ramadan festivities or your Purim or whatever. Like, if someone wished me a happy something or a, you know, fulfilling whatever, even if I don't do that thing, I'm not going to be like, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? Because I don't care. And no, I'm not Christian. So it's not just a thing of like, well, that's because your thing's the dominant thing. I am definitely not Christian. But also, I don't really see Christmas as like super Christian, if I'm being honest. As a non-Christian, I'm like, I don't know, man, Santa and presents and all that shit, that seems pretty divorced from church. But that's fine. That's fine. I wanted to talk to you guys about duels, because I've been meaning to get to this for, like, weeks. And, so Cassie Poonmaster Flex gave me a book, and it was, like, the Illustrated Book of Extraordinary Deaths or something, and it's, like, basically short one-panel comics about weird deaths. And the one that stuck out the most in my mind, probably, was a duel between two Frenchmen. And what they decided to do was they decided they were, you know, too good for a normal duel, right? They're like, well, we can't just shoot each other, like, in the street like commoners. You know what I mean? That would be, ugh, gauche. Is that the right word? They were like, we're better than that. And, you know, I don't know whether or not they were better than that, but I agree with the sentiment because it turned out to be a great tale. So what these guys decided to do was to build identical hot air balloons. By the way, this is over a lady that they're having this duel. They build identical hot air balloons, which then they plan to fly to a predetermined height. There's someone on the ground who's going to, like, signal once they've reached the appropriate height. And then they will try to take each other down by shooting the other man's balloon. So guy A will try and shoot guy B's balloon, and guy B will be trying to shoot guy A's balloon. And that's how they'll die. So then they will plunge to their doom. And let's just talk about some of the reasons that's crazy. Beyond the immediately apparent thing, which is, like, that they did it. I mean, that's fucking crazy, but there's even more. So they construct these balloons, which takes, you know, a couple weeks, right? Which is, like, this is something that seems to be very crazy about these duels, is that they seem to take a long time to actually get the duel going. And I would have thought this was because they were hesitant and whatever, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like they're just as fiery about it by the time they get to it. I mean, how pissed off do you have to be to be like, I am so pissed off at this other guy that I'm going to get in a hot air balloon and I'm going to go to a height and I'm going to give myself, even if I'm confident in myself, 70-30 chance of victory. You know what I mean? Just there's so many factors here not in my control. And I'm so pissed at this other dude that that's what I'm going to do over a lady. And it's like, you know, and I couldn't find a lot of details about this lady, but it sounded like they were both just basically interested in the same person. Which also makes it very crazy, because it's like, so, you know, I hit on a girl in a bar, and then she's like, oh, I have a boyfriend. And then I'm like, oh, all right, never mind. I'll be on my way. Enjoy that drink I bought you. This is what I assume people do who do things like buy drinks for people in bars. But, you know, that would be basically the beginning and the end for me. But then, like, if you're in old-timey France, you're like, sir, you just hit on this woman who I also just met and was hitting on. The only solution is for one of us to die. There's not room in this world for two people who like this woman. So let's do this. So they had, like, tons of time to think about it. It does make me wonder, like, maybe there were a lot of duels that just didn't make it into recorded history because everyone's like, well, if you wait, like, 3 weeks, you're going to be like, eh, fuck it. By then, at best, you'll be like, fuck it, and at worst, you'll be like, oof, I'm fucking glad I didn't do that. You know what? I gotta believe, like, even those of us who've been, you know, wounded by the arrows and slings of love, would look back on, you know, the time when we were at our lowest, our darkest point, and be like, at that point, sure, maybe I was thinking about hurting myself or someone else. But I think most of us also, once you go through 5 or 6 of those, you're like, nah, you know what? I'm just going to wait, because I think I'm going to feel differently about this in the morning. And in the subsequent, you know, 50 mornings after that. And it turns out you do. This is Pete's little advice corner, in case there's any young people who've stumbled upon this, is like, hey, if you're thinking about doing something stupid, like doing a hot air balloon duel with another guy who hit on your lady, don't do it. Just don't. It's not worth it. You won't be happy that you did this. You won't feel like I've made a good decision. And also, just, like, wait a couple weeks. You'll feel differently. Trust me. So anyway, they go up in these balloons. Now, here's another crazy part. Typically in a duel, everyone, or the two duelers, brought a second. And a second is, like, another guy who basically is along for, you know, the duel, to make sure that everything's fair, you know, to make sure that nobody cheats, to make sure, you know, basically, I think it's like you bring your own referee. And it's like, all right, well, if each guy brings his own referee, then everything's cool, right? Then I know that nothing fucked up is going to happen. And probably it also helps me not just want to run away, because I'm like, ah, shit. There is a Kmart in Loveland. I did not know that. This is amazing. It will probably keep you from just, like, wussing out and running away, which is what everyone wants to do, right? So then, this hot air balloon duel, though, you would think they'd be like, well, you know, what can you do? But, oh no, they both brought a second. So that means that not only did they each have a balloon and themselves, there was another dude in there who was basically just there to make sure no one cheated at the duel, and one of them was also certain to die, right? So then the appointed day arrives, they get in their balloons, they take off. I guess people were gathered and cheering because they, you know, they just thought it was, hey, cool, some hot air balloons are flying around today. And, you know, it's like, they probably did not realize that the balloonists were going to try to kill each other and hated each other's guts. But so be it. So then they get up in the air, and one guy shoots the other's balloon. It goes crashing to the ground. I believe it landed on a house or a building of some kind. And then the guy died, and so did his second. The end. Now, what the fuck? I mean, a bad idea, crazily executed. This is what I give them credit for, is it was crazily executed. Which is like, all right, well, you know what? It's a bad idea, but they had fucking follow through, that's for sure. They didn't just, like, give up on the concept. When things got tough, when they were like, I'm gonna have to make a fucking hot air balloon and be in it, they didn't just say, oh, shit, I don't want to do that. They were like, no, no, this is what we're doing. So this got me looking into some more duels. You know, and there was, of course, many an article about the craziest duels. But some of my favorites. One was a duel where it was like some guy who was an experienced swordsman. And I guess at this time, you know, swords were the common dueling thing. And he was going to duel a guy who had no sword experience whatsoever. Or, you know, was he clearly outmatched this other guy. And so the good at swords guy was like, well, that'll never do. I'm not going to just fucking kill this guy. We have to duel. We have to make it fair somehow. So what he came up with was he's like, all right, we'll tie our arms together. Each of us will have a dagger. We're going to get in the back of a carriage that's driving around a circle. And the carriage will just circle around until one of us is dead. And so that's what they did. It took like 2 laps around this little circle. And then, you know, there was a bunch of screaming and stuff. And then it turned out, yeah, that the more experienced fighter was victorious, of course. And you're just like, what does it take for someone to be like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. And how do you as a carriage driver, too? You're just like, okay. I mean, people want to get mad about someone hurling in the back of an Uber. Just fucking imagine you're a carriage driver and they're like, we're going to duel to the death in the back of your carriage with knives. It's probably going to be a fucking mess. And you're like, well, what can I do? I'm a guy in old-timey France or something. I don't really have a lot of choices. There was another one, too, which was, I think this was an Old West duel, but I'm not sure. But what happened was this guy was going to duel a doctor. And the doctor was like, all right, I'm game. So at the appointed time, the doctor shows up and strips all his clothes off. And the other dude is like, whoa, 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 what the fuck? And the doctor was like, well, I'm only going to duel you naked because here's the thing. This doctor knew, or I don't know if he told them or he just knew or what, but he was aware that a lot of duelers died from infection, not necessarily from the original wound. I think this may have had something to do with, like, I think guns back in the day might have been kind of shitty, but I'm not sure. But he was like, it happens because the bullet, you know, passes through your clothes, which are filthy, and then gets all kinds of shit in your body. So if I'm naked, if I get shot, I'll have a better chance of not dying of an infection, which is not what I want to do. I guess he'd probably seen some people go that way. And the other guy was like, I don't know about this. And the duel ended up not happening because the other guy, I think wisely, was like, well, if you're naked, this only leaves me 2 possibilities for how this ends up. One possibility is that we duel. I win. And then I'm the guy who shot the naked guy. Not exactly prestigious. The other possibility is we duel and you win, and then I'm the guy who got killed by the naked guy. Also not great. So point being that, you know, the duel didn't happen because he was just like, I don't want to be either of those things. Neither of those works for me. And then they were like, all right, fine. Well, I guess there's no duel then. It got me thinking, too, about old-timey doctors. Because this was also something that came up several podcasts ago. I think we were talking about those PETA things, right? And I was talking about them with a coworker, and she was like, well, I don't know why people say, like, tear me a new one. You know, my boss is going to tear me a new one. Because it's like, well, that's short for saying, like, my boss is going to tear me a new asshole. Which is like, that's way more violent than kill 2 birds with 1 stone. And, like, more visceral and weird. And I was like, I kind of agree with that. I guess you don't know. It's not like he's necessarily... I think when everyone pictures the phrase, tear me a new asshole, they're picturing, like, tearing your existing asshole wider or, like, putting a second asshole in right where your asshole is. Which I'm like, well, maybe your boss would just, you know, like, I don't know, perforate your arm or something and be like, this is your new second asshole, you fucker. Now get back to work, which is still horrific, but I guess not. It's not the same as being told you're going to have, you know, it's not like an episiotomy or something. So, you know, and one of the other ones is like blowing smoke up my ass. And it's like, yeah, what's the deal with that? So we looked it up and it turns out the origin of that is there was some doctor who was saying that, who was like promoting that as a way to revive victims of drowning. And whenever I see stuff like that, I always wonder because I'm like, okay, This means one of a couple things. Either, and I'm sure there's more than just these couple things it could be, but these are as far as my imagination can go, so go with me for a minute here. Perhaps there was a doctor at some point who saw someone revived in this way. Now, how somebody hit on the idea of putting smoke into someone's ass, which I, you know, according to the research I did, was accomplished with like a bellows. How someone even thought, like, oh, this person's drowning, let's put smoke up their butt and that will revive them, is one question. But how it worked is an entirely other question, right? But my theory on that one is like, well, all right. I know, you know, there's a lot of... It seems like back in the day, a lot of people would be thought to be dead and then not actually be dead. Because it seems like maybe they didn't necessarily have the best grasp of, like, how can we be sure this person isn't dead? You know what I mean? Like, if you were in a coma or something and you were surviving, how would they know? But, I just, like, made myself car sick a little bit while driving. That's pretty amazing. Turn the heat down. Anyway, how would you know? So maybe someone had drowned and they thought they were dead. And it's like, well, basically just by cramming something in their butt and then blowing material, matter, air, whatever, smoke into the butt was enough to just wake them the fuck up. Because, I mean, it's hard for me to know because I'm a very light sleeper. You know, I do not sleep heavily enough to where I don't think someone could get a bellows into my butt without me waking up. Like, I will never wake up without pants on, having gone to sleep with pants on and not removed them myself. You know what I mean? And not wake up. That's never going to happen. It's like the few times, the handful of times I've been under anesthesia, it's amazing. And I'm like, is this what it's like when people sleep? Like normal people? Because this is great. Like, I love this. It's like uninterrupted, complete deep sleep. And it feels like my brain is not even doing anything. Like, it's my brain is just like, oh, let's just chill out, guys. And it's fantastic. So anyway, I wondered if A, somebody at some point had successfully revived a drowning victim with bellows, or, and this is the B that I am equally intrigued by, B, I wondered, is it possible that, like, okay, let's say it's like Old West Gold Rush days, Deadwood days. I come rolling into Deadwood as Pete, and I just, you know, I crossed the country. I made my way from Tennessee to Colorado to Deadwood, South Dakota. And I'm in Deadwood, and I just roll into town. There's, like, you know, 100 people there is all. And someone is like, oh my God, we need a doctor. And I just decide, like, it doesn't seem that hard. I think I could be a doctor. So I just start doctoring. I just start performing doctorly duties, as you know, because it's like, I don't know, I saw a doctor a couple times. I watched what they did. I observed. And then just kind of did what they did. Because here's my question. Number one, it's not like today where I feel like, you know, you can't just watch a medical show. If you'd never been to a doctor, if you were like raised on the prairie or some shit and had never seen a doctor in your life, I mean, you may not have even seen a doctor when you were born, right? So like, if you had never seen a doctor, who else would say, like, that man is no doctor? I doubt his abilities. Number two, okay, I would think maybe you'd get in trouble because, like, maybe after some time it would be, you know, everyone would be like, this guy's losing a lot of patience. I don't know if I'd believe him as a doctor. But I gotta believe that a lot of patients who saw doctors back in those days did not make it. Like, I would think, for the most part, by the time you got to the doctor, you were in deep shit. And, like, people were already like, well, this is our last resort. Cut my life into pieces. Because, you know, there's a doctor, but I don't think he's going to make it. And so, you know, they bring me this person. And they're like, he drowned 45 minutes ago. Seems to be dead. And then when I just say, like, all right, I feel like there's some doubts going around about my medical skills. So what I'm going to do is just come up with some crazy-ass treatment just to keep the mystique going. Make people think, like, maybe this guy does know something. And then I'll be like, all right, I've got an unorthodox idea. I saw this done once in Wichita. But, you know, you got to follow my directions exactly. And if you doubt it at any point and you stop doing it, I promise you he'll die. And they're like, okay, well, let's do it then. I'm like, all right, I'm going to hook up this bellows. You put this hose in his butt. And they're like, what? What? In the butt. And then they put a hose in his butt. And I blow smoke in there. Maybe he comes back. Maybe he doesn't. But either way, they're like, you know, this is like the Hail Mary crazy shit that you see on, like, House. You know, where House is like, oh my god, let's do this, and then we won't have to amputate this woman's leg. And everyone else is like, if we don't take the leg, she's gonna die. And he's like, well, if you take the leg, she's probably gonna die anyway, so why don't we do this crazy thing? And then they do the crazy thing, and it works. And then everyone's like, House, you done it again. But then next week, they all forget. That's my biggest problem with House, is I'm like, at what point does everyone who works with House just be like, you know what? This guy knows what he's doing in so many crazy situations. And, like, maybe I can afford to just kind of let him do whatever. Because if at some point he does something that's, like, way out of bounds, I think I'll just be like, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to have you review the following, you know, 800 cases that he solved using very unorthodox methods. And, you know, I'm going to just march in person after person who is cured by House, who is like, he's a total asshole, but he saved my life, so whatever. And we're just going to do this until the court is like, okay, or the board or whoever is like, okay. Well, I got to be honest, at this point, I'm going to agree with you. You had every reason to think that House was right about everything. And then you're like, yeah, no shit. Thank you. So anyway, I wonder if, you know, something like blowing smoke up the ass came about because it's like, no one would really know who a doctor was, right, and wasn't. I mean, Doc Holliday was a dentist. And I gather he had some training, but I also gather that, like, the dental training for, you know, fucking the 1800s was probably not. It was probably a lot about extractions. I'll tell you that right now. Although I don't know how far they've come. Dentists really should be ashamed of themselves for, like, how not far they've come. Like, there's just not much going into dental research here. How come everyone talks about genes and, like, oh, we wouldn't want to change genes so that, like, somebody, you know, could decide that their kid was going to have blue eyes or something. And I'm like, you know, if I could change my kid's genes so they never had a cavity, I would fucking do that in a heartbeat. And I am qualified because people may say, oh, well, you know, your kid will miss out on these character developing things of, like, having crooked teeth or cavities or dental pain or whatever. And I'm like, nah, you know what? I can just fucking hit him in the back with a broom handle or something if that's what you think is necessary. I mean, to knowingly do that and be like, oh, they need this pain to build character. And I'm like, eh, it doesn't build character so much as just, like, cost a bunch of money and, like, suck. It just sucks. And you go to the dentist and they make you feel like shit because they're like, you got a cavity. And I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, I use this mouth for literally everything. They're like, couldn't you do this? Couldn't you do that? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I got. This is kind of my situation. But dentists really should be ashamed. I mean, look at the music industry, okay? I have in my pocket right now a tiny, tiny square. You know, it's the size of maybe 4 Chiclets put together. Maybe even smaller. And it can contain more music than, like, any previous media, you know, as far as, like, CDs, tapes, whatever. I mean, not only can it contain more, it contains way fucking more, right? And, like, the delivery method is so easy now, and you can have so much with you at any given time. I can have my entire collection of music with me at all times. I mean, that's progress, right? That's good. That's good stuff. They should be proud of themselves in terms of, like, you know, we've found a very effective delivery system for this bullshit music that we're continuing to make that's terrible. But, I mean, it's easy for people to get it. So that's something. I'm like, yeah, I guess that's true. I suppose that's accurate. So anyway, yeah, the dentists can go fuck themselves, basically. I always worry that my dentist listens to this. You know, not my new dentist, but my old dentist. I was like, I wonder, because I was going to see him a lot. The new dentist I haven't seen very much. But I always wonder, you know, don't you wonder? You're like, yeah. So the last time, I'm going to just assume my dentist doesn't listen to this, because the last time I went to my dentist, so a new dentist took over for the old dentist. I don't like the new dentist as much. But he's like partners with another new dentist. And the new dentist is a guy who was about 2 years younger than me, who I coached in cross country when he was in high school. And the reason I recognized him is because in high school, he was always very sweaty. You know, like it was, as a fellow super sweater, I recognized the pain immediately. But, you know, he was like, this is just my lot in life. So they're like, oh yeah, the doctor, I can't remember his last name now. But, you know, and in school, I knew him as Robbie, which I assume he doesn't go by Robbie anymore, but who knows? And so they're like, oh, we'll go get Dr. Whoever. And I was like, that's so familiar. And I was like, Robert so-and-so. And I was thinking about it. And then he's coming in, and I see that he looks kind of red. And he's trying to put on these surgical gloves. And they're like, yeah, we got the smaller size gloves. And he has a hard time putting them on. And he's like, well, especially because, you know, my hands get all sweaty. And so then I can't get my hands in the gloves. And then that's when I was like, that's Robbie. It was the sweatiness that clued me into, oh, that's Robbie. So I've officially reached the age where my medical professional stuff is being performed by people I knew, you know, who are my own age or younger. Like, that's officially happened. Somehow I avoided that up until now, which I don't think is a good thing. Like, I don't know how it happened that I think all of my friends have jobs that don't really give me any direct benefit. You know what I mean? Like, if I knew someone who worked at a fucking pizza place, at least I could get a free pizza once in a while. But it's like, a bunch of my friends work in library stuff, which, like, that does me no good. Because A, I do that, and B, all the shit's free anyway. So what are they going to get me? Or, you know, like, academia. I mean, my siblings, a couple of them worked in academia. That does nothing. I mean, Poon Master Flex is in academia. That does me nothing. My mom takes care of old people. That does me nothing. It's like none of the people that I know, like, actually make a thing or run a business or, like, are doctors or plumbers or something where I'm like, well, if I ever got in a bind, I suppose I could fly Ian out here, you know, to help me install a toilet. Because he would know what he was doing. Or I could, you know, FaceTime him and just be like, can you walk me through this? And he'd be like, fuck yeah. You know, or like if he was a contractor, and I could be like, you could kind of walk me through this, right? And he'd be like, oh yeah, it's cake. Oh, you want to get this condo that has shitty cabinets in it? No problem. We can fix the cabinets. We can fix that right up. Not to put all the blame on him. I'm just sort of astonished because it's like everyone I know is in that same boat. And I just don't know anyone who has like a tangible, super helpful skill. Like, how is there not one auto mechanic that I know? Why am I the most mechanically automotive adept person that I know? Well, that I know the answer to. It's because I'm willing to take something apart. I'm willing to take the risk. That's most of what it takes to fix your own car, is like, do you have the balls to be like, well, I guess I'm going to take this thing apart and hopefully I can put it back the way I did it, the way I, you know, took it apart, but backwards. It's really all it takes. That might be it. That might be it. I've complained about a lot of good things. We talked about Die Hard, we talked about some other shit. It's a new year, so, you know, I think I talk about Patreon at the end of these, but in case I haven't been, you know, you can donate. There are some little incentives. Bonus episode is one of the incentives, and we have now hit 2 years of 100% delivery on bonus episodes. You also get a print newsletter at a very low level, which I think we're up to 100% delivery. We might not have this month's yet, although some of those have come late. But, you know, they show up. That's a good thing, right? The key to a Patreon, I've learned, is to not make huge promises, because then you can't not deliver. I listened to another show that has a Patreon, and it's like the other listeners of it are constantly complaining about, you know, like, oh, I donate to the Patreon, but then, like, they didn't put out an episode this week or for a couple weeks or something. And I'm sort of like, fuckers, don't you know how Patreon... This is how Patreon works. Okay. Patreon is basically your way to pay for something that someone does because you think that what they're already giving you is worthwhile. You don't join Patreon for the perks. Now, you might join Patreon because of the perks, which is different. Like the show that I like, it's like, well, you get a bonus episode every week, and it's like, well, I want to listen to the bonus episode. So that probably prompted me to do it more readily than if there hadn't been bonus episodes, let's be honest. But I'm kind of like, yeah, I mean, if they're doing the bonus episodes and you're paying the Patreon thing and they're not, like, putting out a new regular episode every week, I mean, who fucking cares? Like, they're up to almost episode 400 at this point. And that's not including, you know, so much other bonus time and whatever. I was hoping to beat them to episode 400. Although I can't decide if I'm going to do anything special for 400 or not. I did a special 300. Because that seemed like, I guess at the time I was like, I don't know if I'll like make it to 300. And then I think I felt like a renewed sense of like, let's make it to 300. But 400 just seems like kind of, you know, a stop on the way to 500. 500 seems like the big thing, right? And then you see other shows, you're like, this guy has fucking 1,400 shows. Like, why is he even keeping track anymore? I wonder if after 500 I won't even keep track. I mean, I don't really keep track. I think the only reason to keep the number is because that seems like the most convenient way to organize it. And, you know, I'm always thinking like, well, if I had to go back and reorganize these files, I'd probably be really pissed at myself because there was a period in there where I was just naming them because I was like, oh, who fucking cares what the number is? But also I was like, I'm sure for some people that makes it much harder to keep track. So it seems like a nice favor to do to people to keep the number. But, you know, it's not for my personal edification. Anyway, point being, 500 seems like a lot for me. Even though I don't know that it's like, it seems like a lot of big shows, you know. You're like, I don't know, Mark Maron, he's probably got like 1,000 by now, right? Every time I find out someone that I wanted to hear on Mark Maron's show was on Mark Maron's show, I look and it was like, oh, that was like 5 years ago. All right, fuck it. I wanted to listen. He did one with Aaron Draplin. And I was like, oh, that's great. I didn't know that happened. So I try and get on there, and of course it's like been behind a paywall for like 3 years or whatever. So I'm like, I guess I'll just listen to this on YouTube, but man, is that unsatisfying. Man, is that unsatisfying. And like, the thing is, Mark Maron's system annoys me. Because, like, I like the Patreon system better. Let's bring it back around. I like the Patreon system better. Because that gives me the option of, like, hey, you like this thing they do, right? Well, here's some more of it. And you can pay for what they do. And I'm like, that's awesome. The paywall system is kind of like, I don't really listen to that show very much. I listen to one episode every so often. Because of the guests. You know, not because of Mark Maron. He just tends to get guests that I like from time to time. But, you know, it seems weird to me. I guess, I don't know. It's like, I don't want to navigate a whole thing for a paywall. Like, I don't want to do a whole thing where I'm like, all right, well, now what do I do? Do I just get, like, this naked MP3 file? And then I have to, like, put that into iTunes or something and then put it into my fucking iPod somehow? Like, what is happening? And then I'll listen to it once, and also I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to like it. You know, it just depends, because I'm like, well, I'll probably like it if the guest talks a lot, and if Mark Maron talks a lot, I'll probably get bored. Because I don't really care that much. And also, I'm like, well, I mean, this particular guest, I'm like, I read his book, so maybe I wouldn't really enjoy it that much, because, you know, who cares? I've probably heard most of what he has to say. I would assume if you make a book, you put most of the most important things in the book. So, who knows. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the paywall system for some reason. I guess I could do that. I always thought if I did that, what I would do is just, like, batches of 100. Put them up as an album, and then you buy that album for, like, $5. And then it's, like, an enormous, massive album that lets you, you know, and it's all in there, so you can just listen to fucking 100 episodes or something. And maybe even do it in two ways, like do it seamless, so all the shows just blend together from beginning to end as one long thing. Or as individual tracks. I say that now, but I probably would not do that. Unless I get access to some kind of supercomputer that allows me to do that in a far more speedy way than I'd be able to now. Fuck that shit. But it would be cool. This is why I need an intern. I was talking to somebody who was saying, you know, that they had a board of directors type person who was using the company to sort of hire her own interns for her own, you know, home-based business or whatever, entrepreneurial efforts. And, like, I work with high school students at my regular job as interns and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I could actually have them do a lot of stuff for this that would be helpful. And I'm like, that would be such a foolish thing to do. That would be a really good way to lose your job for a variety of reasons, most of which I would have to agree with. Most of the reasons that it's a bad idea, I'd have to say, like, you know, when it was like, so you're called into the boss's office with HR, and they're like, hey, listen, were you doing this? And I'm like, I don't know. What are you? And they're like, all right, I don't know why we asked you. We know you're doing this and don't do this, and you're fired for doing this thing that, you know, we just asked you if you did. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, do you have anything to say for yourself? No. I mean, what would I say? What could I possibly say about that would be remotely reasonable? Anything? Is there anything you can say to that? Have you been using interns to put together old episodes of this podcast, which feature, you know, offensive material to adults, and you had, you know, a high school senior entering into this work completely unaware of what they're doing? And I'm like, yes, I did do that. That was a mistake. You know, and that's the thing, is I'm like, you know, I wanted to do it and didn't want to get caught. I wish people would just say that when they're like, why would you do that? And you're like, Because I thought that perhaps I couldn't get caught, and if I didn't get caught, the benefits were actually pretty substantial. If you can just take a moment and look at it from my perspective, I'm not saying that you need to agree with me that the benefits outweigh the horrible thing I've done. But what I do want you to do is look at it from my perspective in as much as saying, you know, I understand why you made that choice. Like, wouldn't be the choice that I made, but can I understand why you, as someone who had, you know, fucking 200 hours worth of podcasting that you wanted stitched together in one continuous mega episode, can I understand why you chose to have someone do that for free? Yes. Yes, I do. I guess this is why I need to, you know, maybe make this like an official company or something, because then I can have interns and be like, yeah, I need you to do this shit. Maybe I could get like marketing interns. They had to do a professional experience at the college, the business school. So maybe like a marketing student, I could be like, I don't know, market this show. I suck at it. You do it. You do it and you tell me how it works. You're the fucking expert. You're so fucking smart. You student. You fucking student. There's a pretty amazing right now cross, lit up cross that I assume is on top of some kind of pole or something, but it's so high in the air. And I can't tell how it's suspended. It looks pretty awesome. Like, if I was, you know, again, if I was old-timey Dr. Pete just wandering and I saw this, oh, maybe it's on top of a mountain that I can't see because it's misty. If only I had a disabled reindeer that I could abuse his powers. But anyway, it looks amazing. And I would believe in Jesus if I was an old-timey Dr. Pete. I would believe in Jesus unless I went and I was like, I'm going to go investigate this cross. But, you know, if it was on top of a mountain also, I'd probably be like, do I want to investigate this? This may be the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Or do I want to not go all the way up this mountain? And I think I would want to not go all the way up this mountain. I think that's the choice I'd make.
Oh, fuck.
I had something really important to say about where I'm going, but I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what it was. Something about the last time I was here or something. I was here right around this time last year. I went to a New Year's Eve concert, which was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. I was kind of drunk. I don't know. That would be one of my big weaknesses if I had decided to be sober. Because I've thought about it. I'm like, maybe sobriety's for you, Pete. Because I do not like being hungover. And, you know, the older I get, the more often I'm viciously hungover from not even drinking very much. And it just ruins the entire next day. And, like, I don't like that. I need my time. I need time to get things done. Poonmaster Flex was asking me the other day, she's like, what is like an ideal, what's ideal Peter time? You know, because it's like, you know, what's me time, what's this? And it's like, what is Peter time? Like, what's the ideal? And I was like, all right, here's ideal Peter time. It's a 3-day weekend. So Peter comes home work late from, comes home from work and gym late on Friday. Saturday, he wakes up, you know, at like 9:30. And gets everything done on his to-do list. He does the laundry. He cooks for the week. He works on some writing projects. He does some podcasting. He does everything, right? Gets all his shit done. And, you know, at the end of the day, Saturday, he's accomplished all of his tasks and really has nothing left to do. The next day is Sunday, which normally would suck, but because it's a 3-day weekend. It's not really Sunday. It's kind of Sunday. And Pete has nothing that he's required to do on this day. And not only does he have nothing he's required to do, he really has nothing to do because he's accomplished all his tasks the day before. And so he spends the day, you know, lazily laying in bed, watching crap on YouTube. Maybe he watches a film at some point. Plays some video games. You know, just a bunch of nothing, basically. That's all I'm really looking for. But just the day of, like, no pressure. There's nothing to do. I mean, there's nowhere to be. No one's expecting me at any time. And I can just kind of do a self-directed, no-direction day. One direction, I say too many. None direction. That's Pete's boy band. That's kind of my ideal. And it doesn't happen as often as you would think. I mean, even let's put aside, like, the three-day weekend thing. But even the, like, Pete gets a bunch of stuff done on Saturday and then has Sunday free, doesn't really work. Doesn't. I think there's just too much. So anyway, so I've thought about, like, well, maybe you'd get more done if you were never hungover. Not that, oh my God, there's a huge raccoon coming out of the sewer. That was awesome. Not that I'm hungover very often, because I'm really not. I don't drink a ton these days. But, I don't know, I'd gain something back if I wasn't ever drinking. But I think the big downfall would be concerts. And not concerts that I am, like, a big fan of, but concerts that I'm going to where I'm, like, I don't know the band or I'm just kind of along for the ride. Boof, those would be tough. I think those would be the most difficult part of not drinking. Because it's just like, oh my God. You know, I enjoyed the other concert and I was like, I remember there was a song even they were playing and I was like, I like this song. I should listen to this song when I'm not drunk and see if I still like it. But I couldn't remember enough of the song. I couldn't remember anything about it. So I was like, ah, shit. Well, I couldn't remember enough about it to tell someone, like, oh, this is what happened in the song. So there you go. All right. I think it's time for me to go. Thank you for partying with me. I hope you all have a good time. A good time? A good life? And also, again, I've done a show where it's like, oh, that was over, and then now it's not over. It was, like, totally over, and then it's back, baby. All right. We'll see you next time.